Have a seat, esteemed panelists. This session, we're going to get into the trenches a little, the fun stuff. So, as you know, I'm Mary Yerkovic, Director of Smart Content. I work with the advisors who were up here with Guy earlier. I am also a consultant, and I work with a lot of different companies. I focus on smart technologies. So everything we're talking about today. I work in the pharmaceutical industry, manufacturing, consumer product goods. We all have the same challenges. Data, content, and making our work staff smarter. I'm going to have the panelists introduce themselves, and then we're going to dive right in.
Go ahead. I guess I will start. I am Christina Aguilera. I am the head of creative engineering at Amazon Studios. So I am responsible for not only the asset management team, as well as our data integrity team, but also a team of really great engineers and product folks that are building everything from planning all the way through our distribution and servicing library.
My name is Michael Cioni. I'm a futurist and technologist and entrepreneur working in the post-production and production worlds, and most recently working for the cloud-based collaboration company, Frame.io. And Frame.io is one of these like super scaling collaboration tools. It's all a cloud-based integration. And my most recent work here at Frame.io is with connecting cameras directly to the cloud so that we have an automated direct delivery to editorial and post houses from cameras without any movement in between, no hard drives, no downloading, and no backups and things like that. Everything backs up automatically. So happy to be here.
Thank you.
My name is Chuck Parker. I've been in industry for a long time. I was at Technicolor for about 15 years in different parts of the business. Did a few startups in the space, and am now at a company called Soho Net, where I'm the CEO. Essentially, we connect storytellers, which starts with a private network, but with some specialized SaaS-based services built on top that are pointed directly at production, post-production, visual effects for the TV and film industry.
I wanted to jump in here quick because I think, you know, I'm the reason why you all are up here on this panel. And just for some background, I just didn't want you to have to tell the story, because concentrate on the meat, right, not on the meal. I was at the HPA, the Hollywood Professional Association Alliance. Sorry, Chuck, you sit on the board. Hollywood Professional Alliance, correct?
Correct.
I was at their tech retreat, their annual tech retreat, which is amazing. I mean, such a great community and so many cool creatives. And I essentially saw Mr. Cioni's presentation there, some of the groundbreaking work they did at HPA. Knowing also Christina's task at Amazon and what you're building, it was a harmonic convergence that I also thought, yes, camera to cloud is critical, cloud, 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 cloud. But the reality is your appeal for data, and Chuck also, we go back to data in the original days. Chuck was the executive director of the Second Screen Society, kind of the chairman of that as we rode that. So I just thought this would be a perfect opportunity to really talk about that data stream behind it, because the cloud is innovative, absolutely, and it's where we're going. But if we don't have our schemas right, that's when it gets dangerous. So I'm just taking culpability in terms of getting this group up there. Sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. And much to what Guy just said, you know, technology is really changing at the speed of our imagination. And, you know, there's so many innovative products out there. You take that those products that our end users are using, so they're brainwashed to use Google, they're brainwashed to use a lot of amazing products. They want their information immediately, and they want their content immediately. So how do you provide that to them in this creative environment where your asset management system is at the hub of all of this action with data and content, and you can't stop production? These people move fast. So Christina, you know, what are some of the challenges you have with working with a DAM and your end users and getting them on board where they are brainwashed to want?
I think from a challenge perspective on the production side, there is this perception that there may be one DAM solution within a production team, and that's just not accurate. Production is multiple asset management type solutions that need to work together. So having to make sure that you've got the data that can flow all the way from the camera and keep it consistent as it's going through that production life cycle across all of these many systems, and having all of these systems talk to each other so you don't lose the data along the way, I think that's the challenge that is our fun opportunity we have in front of us.
Yes, absolutely. And Michael and Chuck, you guys are on the data side. You know, how do you marry that? How do you see that innovation with marrying with a DAM system and enriching that content with amazing information and data?
I would say the most important challenge that we're dealing with today is a change in behavior, because essentially every time we go through a cataclysmic change, everybody has to change how they think before they can change how they work, right? And those are pragmatic sort of sequences that have to happen, and they all happen differently for different people. And so we're in this early stage of getting people to be comfortable with cloud security. Most of you in the room, many of you in the room may already be there. All of us are actually totally confident in cloud security in certain spaces, like, for example, banking. Everybody, unless you have money under your mattress, everybody agrees commonly that the banking system is secure and the thing we covet the most is safe, and we can get it when we need it. And they can transfer data back and forth millions of times an hour, and everybody's money is where it's supposed to be. In the Hollywood and media and entertainment sector, that's changing because this is new and we are skeptics by nature. And being able to change the behavior of understanding that we can put our assets in the cloud and they can be just as safe is different. That's new. That's scary. And one of the phrases we use at Frame.io is that when people ask, is the cloud secure, we challenge them and say, the question's wrong. Because the cloud is secure, the question you should be asking is, am I using the cloud securely? And most of the time, if you do the research, and we are actually publishing new research on this, the overwhelming majority of security issues that happen with assets affiliated with media and entertainment are inside jobs. And that's where the leaks and the exposure and the risks tend to come from, not packet sniffers and groups tunneling in. While there is examples where that can happen, that is far smaller the likeliness of assets being put to risk. If today we're comfortable giving hard drives to FedEx strangers to ship, standard hard drives you can buy off the shelf, which we're okay with doing for some reason, we should certainly be okay with transmitting it to something like AWS and relying on that infrastructure to be just as secure as a FedEx truck.
Right. And it's trusting your IT too, like just what you said. Companies I work with are like, oh yeah, the assets are in the DAM system, but they're also on my hard drive here, so I can easily get at them because I don't trust IT. But I trust the FedEx guy. Chuck?
I think the challenges that we see our customers facing in this space is often what Michael is describing and Christina as well, which is the ability for you to move your production assets and into post, those assets in between systems. There's a security element for sure, and certainly in our industry, everyone tries to secure the perimeter, and then you work very hard to secure your workflow, but as Michael pointed out, everybody who shows up in production brings their own device. It's a BYOD world. And inherently, your security system is flawed from the inside out. So there's a whole lot of work you need to do at your production and post-production levels to protect against that content. That starts with physical trust, putting people on the right VLANs, et cetera. But even as you try to move that data, I would suggest everyone in the room thinks of it in two ways. You're thinking of moving the data physically because you're really trying to move the ability for a producer, director, whomever, VFX, post supervisor, trying to see that what's happening in a different physical location is one of the problems you're facing. And then the necessity to move in between systems is the other part of your problem, right? So even if you could get everyone in the same room, you can't do everything in Avid. So you have to have the ability to move. And of course, transmitting the appropriate metadata that goes with that securely in between the stages is one of the hardest things our industry's faced since we moved away from physical film assets, and hence the challenge.
Yeah, that's so much to their point. You know, it's not one system; it's many, as Christina said, and you have to connect all these systems. It's just how innovation is going to happen. And when you start connecting systems, you're going to start having the challenge of, with data, some definitions of words and those different silos. The pre-production people may have different terminology from the post-production people. How do you deal with that? All this different verbiage that's happening within the silos.
Well, it's important to have all of these teams talking and agreeing on a controlled vocabulary that works for everybody so that we can encourage single terminologies across all of these systems in order to reduce the just the confusion that may occur when people are using either the same term for different uses or many different terms for a single use. And that's a consistent problem, even beyond production. It's just something that we have to do and have to face and encourage the collaboration of these disparate teams to start thinking as one.
And the challenges that you guys deal with implementing solution and having this big, all this data that you're trying to match with the content.
I find the biggest challenge with data and metadata specifically is how do we make it active for creative users? I tend to find that most people put the phraseology of metadata in a category that represents technical things in nature, right? That's usually what people are referring to when they talk to metadata. But of course, metadata is not technically exclusive. It's creative, and creatives, I don't want to get in a semantics argument here, but generally creatives are pushing the content forward. We need creatives to require more so that innovators and technologists have something to do, and we rely on creatives to kind of keep raising that bar. That's sort of our relationship with each other. But if we make metadata specifically about the technology side of things, then the creatives won't learn how they can leverage it. And we need to teach them and create opportunities that the metadata that we're capturing actually has function for a creative industry, not just a technical one. So archivists need their side of it because that's how we find it and get it back and use it in the future. But creative people want to know how it serves them in terms of searching and automation and voice recognition and face recognition and logo recognition and finding out expletives instantly and being able to blur out things on shirts or buildings or signs or just know what a cup of tea looks like or a car looks like or a dress looks like. And being able to have those things instantly available for creatives to leverage, that is a whole nother skew of metadata that I think actually will actually drive the metadata conversation deeper into the mainstream, making it more profitable, because if creatives demand something, most production content owners will pay for it. If technologists require something, it is harder to get someone to write a check, infinitely harder.
And also, I just wanted to add that creatives historically have relied on the technical metadata because we didn't have the capabilities to add that descriptive metadata early on. But now that we are turning that corner and we can add the descriptive data in an automated way that is accurate, and they are able to pivot their habits so that they can start relying on it, it's really exciting to be on that side and working with those teams who are now asking for it. So it is definitely a corner that we're turning, and it's exciting to be part of it.
Sure. So I think when we think about this metadata problem, certainly in the production and post process, we looked at where we can help our customers. Clearly, we're not going to go build, as our company at least, we're not going to go build an asset management system that links, you know, say, Base Light up to Avid in the post process. What we can do is try to reduce the amount of metadata required so that people can work remotely as teams, but work like they're in the same room. So we describe that as an over-the-shoulder editing experience or over-the-shoulder experience. And what we want to do is, wherever possible, is reduce the need for the video and the sound to change systems. So if you're in Avid or if you're in Flame or if you're already in Base Light, how do we help keep your workflow in that same tool, so it doesn't need to move yet to another tool, but still allows your creative people to participate in the creative process, even though they're either 5 miles away across this crazy town in terms of traffic, or 5,000 miles away shooting or posting in London. And that hopefully enables people to spend lots of brain power on bringing the more valuable metadata to the foreground, which allows them to create better content versus trying to solve the problem of how do I get my video, my sound somewhere else and interpret it in a manner that I can still work in the same content.
I think it's always frustrating for users to go weave in and out of these systems. What other kind of innovations have you seen with companies? I'm looking at you two, and obviously, Christina, you have a lot to add to this, where you're making it easier on the production people not to have to weave in and out of these systems that can be time-consuming, or, you know, people still Slack or pick up the phone to find some information that they're looking for.
The key is a phraseology that I have in my innovation team is automation, and automation is key. Like, we have to automate it, but it's also integration. Things have to be fully integrated and fully automated. The reason this is tricky, it's a little bit of a new approach from how companies generally design their product lines. When companies make their product lines, they tend to skew towards a more vertically or silo, vertically integrated system where they build these layers of features and they try to kind of contain it, right? And that worked for a long time. A good example of this that we all sort of bowed down to was Sony. Sony built, they were the best example where they built the videotape, they built the tape machines, they built the switchers, they built the cameras, and we basically used Sony from the beginning to the end, and Master Control at the end of the day would play that tape out to the airwaves. And it was a very, very good siloed, vertically integrated system. But with software and with the cloud, we have to learn to, we cannot own the world. And Sony's learned that because they've essentially lost all that market that they used to have. It's now been compartmentalized up to dozens of groups that now do the same services. And so we have to learn how to integrate with each other, which is a little bit scary because you're giving people APIs and you're building these SDKs for them to sort of tunnel into your stuff. And you have to have new teams that actually hold the line on the user experience so that when other companies are sharing your information and your database and your UI, that the experience is still, you know, premium. Those are new problems that companies haven't had before. And I predict companies that stay vertically integrated and try to level all these things inside for their users are going to suffer than the ones that seem to be more open and sharing and realize, you know, they use the phrase, it's better to own a little bit of a slice of a watermelon than an entire grape, right? And so we need to look at being more of a slice of a watermelon in this big market as opposed to owning the whole thing. And in the past, you could own the whole watermelon. In the future, I don't think that's going to be the case for most institutions.
And I'm sure that's a challenge for you, Christina, is telling all these solution providers that they have to play nice, right?
It's definitely a historic challenge, but I am approaching more and more companies that are definitely have an open mind to it, and it is great to see the want and the need, and even collaboration with some of these companies without us asking for it. So we are, again, at a point where we're turning a corner, and the integration need in order to meet our automation goals is prevalent and being recognized, and people are proactively seeking those opportunities to grow their own businesses.
I think, Mary, in terms of innovation, that the two challenges we see the industry faces right now with asset management, one is related to the automation piece that Michael was touching on, where people have found a way to solve some of these problems to essentially see the same kind of video and sound signal you're seeing physically in one location in another. But frankly, that technology was put in place, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and hasn't really evolved. So there's a whole lot of what I would describe as IT industry that happens behind the curtains that allows those workflows to work, which means they're subject to failure all the time. And you'll see in those examples when someone's trying to do, you know, an executive finish approval of a major feature from LA to London, or someone's trying to do remote color grading, you see a lot of hard, heavy work for people trying to make up for those failure points by having a 6 a.m. meeting, checking the solution still works today because things could have changed in a network path, a security path overnight, and might destroy your online session. The other realm of innovations we're seeing come forward from people in the space is trying to understand how to get that consumer identity working. So as Mary was saying earlier, everybody in this room, everybody in the industry uses Slack and some version of Zoom or BlueJeans or GoToMeeting. We use Google Docs. And so we have this pretty normal use of I'm working from home or I'm in Starbucks and I'm able to conduct all my collaboration with my colleagues in just about everything I do. Why can't I do that in video, right? And there's some things that need to be solved in that space, but one of those is identifying which workflows you truly need high-end equipment and high-end video signal to do remote color grading, for example, and which ones where you can actually review something on an iPad, like InFrame.io's product, where the absolute 4K 12-bit color with 444 color chroma sampling isn't the requirement. You just need it good enough to make a decision about whether the right scene was shot, whether you missed a critical item in the filming and need to shoot again or not. So trying to break down those two problems is important, and I think that will dramatically, putting COVID-19 aside for a second, if you think about the desire for our industry to have both tax credits, meaning you're shooting and or working in places of value for your production, and talent, meaning there is so much production value in place today that it is hard to get the people you want to leave their comfort of their lives, their families, their friends, to go to Atlanta, for example, and post for 6 months. They might need to be there to shoot, but they don't want to post. So I think those problems are coming together rather quickly, and I think there's some great innovations that people in the industry have to try and solve this.
Always a challenge with end users and trying to bring innovation to them, to the workplace. What other challenges are you seeing?
From an innovation perspective, I think it's not really a challenge per se, but I think one of the things we're looking forward to from the production world is being able to have disparate production teams or studio executives collaborate from their various geographic locations together on the same content at the same time. And I think we are definitely getting close to that and relying on vendor partners to help us get there. But it is definitely a place where we can start to head and be excited and look forward to.
Collaboration, automation?
Yeah, the Frame.io platform has about 1.2 million users, and it's all based on the fundamentals of taking people that are geographically not near each other feel like they are. One of the techniques that I think people should really look at in an innovation space is what the user experience actually feels like, because traditionally, when we think about data asset management and we think about metadata in general, we don't think of that as a premium user experience. But people are used to that. I mean, we watched Shazam this morning go from a four-digit code to an app. And that pivot point from having a phone from four digits to actually just having an app was the difference between failure and success, right? That's essentially what we learned today. And it's easy to kind of grasp that because the user experience was so simple, which he also talked about, even though underneath the hood, there's millions of data points that are making that user experience simple. That's, I think, the biggest opportunity. And I believe if you have two products in the market that do the same thing and one has a good UX and the other has a bad one, it's pretty obvious it's what's going to happen. But I don't think we go into a lot of these problems thinking about the end user experience. What the user experience that we're all thinking about today, and this is an obvious one, but it's a good hint for anyone in this space, is social media. The social media companies have figured out UX better than anybody else, and we all essentially ubiquitously agree they're easy to use, and there's a little bit of dopamine that's dropped when you have a good, when somebody likes you or somebody likes your photo or something like that. And so at Frame.io, we made the platform feel like a social media experience. You can use emojis, and you can, you know, reply and respond and like things and unlike things. And this is the experience that we're taking a token from how the consumers work, which we all also have that space, and right? We're all consumers in social media. And then we're applying that to the professional space. And when we found that it worked, it totally took off because people feel like they're on Instagram, but they're actually doing work for their collaboration with someone out of state. That's a new UX approach, and I think all of us need to explore how to remind ourselves that just because we're dealing professionals in an industry doesn't mean we can get away with a bad user experience.
Right, right. You're tricking the users because they're used to experience, and as you said, in the social media space, well, now you take it, you know, into an organization and real-time production, and they're doing emojis. Does that work with the executives at Amazon? Are they
absolutely
reviewing on approval with emojis?
Ultimately, the experience that any of the creatives, especially in the production world, should be as easy or easier than everything they're using in their everyday lives. So if we can make asset management simple and secure, then we win.
Really good. Chuck?
Yeah, I think just to pull on Michael's thread on user experience a little bit, one of the challenges I see our industry facing right now is we tend to build a user experience that we think solves a problem, right? So let's say offline review and approves. For the last 10, 15 years, we've had the ability to get what has become misnumbered as dailies out of a camera onto an iPad. But we haven't really spent time as an industry trying to understand which master we're trying to serve, right? So if we were building in that Twitter or Instagram example, we would talk about user profiles and whose problems we're trying to solve and how they would use a product. What we tend to do in our industry is we build something that works for the studio executives in that offline review and approve case, but we don't build it for the producer, the director, the cinematographer, right? Because the needs that they have on set, where they would still like access to that iPad to be able to see what's happening, and maybe they shot here in LA and it's being posted somewhere else, and they want to see the first look in the morning after the editing team's touched it, we still give them one experience, which is the experience that a studio team has where they can see 20 productions, and that's nothing like the problem that the one guy has where he's working on his or her production. So I agree. I think user experience is what keeps people from transitioning. It keeps them stuck in their current habits, and unless we solve that, we get stuck with the same problems.
And it can hold good tech back.
Absolutely.
Do we have any questions from the audience at all?
I hope not, because I think we're out of time. Oh. and by the way, that's why we're here. Find these people on the break. Come ask them questions. Learn about what they're doing. You're looking at four individuals. I'll include you, Mary, who are really at the cutting edge of where data and technology is going in our business. So thank you so much, Mary. Thank you so much to the panelists. That was awesome. Great way to start.